Greetings. My 3-minute introduction here is being redone now, July 26, 2021, as the old one started sounding muddy. I also slightly changed and improved it, so please listen to it at least once. Thank you, my brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and thus in the family of God, for listening to my podcast, Personal God Consciousness in Jesus and Living Eternal Truth. I am Brother Dave, your host. Please visit my large website, www.purechristians.org, or ledbyjesus.org, the same website. You will find many valuable and comprehensive religious and spiritual resources there. When you get there, scroll about 25% down the home page, and then you may read, download, and share my always free 100-page PDF of key highlights of my books on the nature, life, and teachings of our Creator Son of God and Son of Man, Jesus Christ. If any here wish to receive by email a free copy of the text of my podcast show, comment, ask questions, and or receive more free text, just email me, dave@purechristians.org. Freely we have received truth in God's Spirit. Freely we love to share His truth. We hope and pray that you do too. We thank you, our brothers and sisters, and the perfecting family of God, of all mankind here on earth. We thank you all for listening. Thank you for your spiritual support by following, liking, downloading, and sharing these podcasts. I never ask for money. This is a 45-year-to-date labor of love. The more living truth from Jesus that you share, the more living truth you are. I have selected verses and paragraphs in each topic from the Christian Bible and from the unique 2,097-page Fifth Epical Revelation of Truth, which is named the Urantia Book, U-R-A-N-T-I-A. That supernal revelation was given to all humans on Urantia, our planet Earth, given around A.D. 1935 in modern American English in Chicago, Illinois, USA, and allows our truth-seeking minds and souls much joy and enthusiasm as we read and reflect on these powerful and transforming intellectual, moral, and spiritual truths. All reflective truth-seeking and God-conscious humans on this planet will find some value from these readings and my comments. The Urantia Book is freely available online in English, which has no copyright. Only humans can hold a copyright. However, this revelation was given by superhuman spiritual beings, making it fully free in the public domain to allow worldwide sharing to help transform our still needy planet. Please share it wisely, as too much light of truth to most humans can be initially blinding. Now we continue in the Urantia Book, the last part 4, The Life and Teachings of Jesus, papers 120 through 196. We are continuing here, starting at paper 145, Four Eventful Days at Capernaum, and we'll start in section 3, The Healing at Sundown. And this will be paragraph 10. Jesus had passed the responsibility for this healing decision to the ruling of his Father. Evidently, the Father's will interposed no objection, for the words of the Master had scarcely been uttered when the assembly of celestial personalities serving under the command of Jesus' personalized thought adjuster was mightily astir. The vast retinue descended into the midst of this motley throng of afflicted mortals, and in a moment of time, 683 men, women, and children were made whole, were perfectly healed of all their physical diseases and other material disorders. Such a scene was never witnessed on earth before that day, nor since. And for those of us who were present to behold this creative wave of healing, it was indeed a thrilling spectacle. Paragraph 11. But of all the beings who were astonished at this sudden and unexpected outbreak of supernatural healing, Jesus was the most surprised. In a moment when his human interests and sympathies were focused upon the scene of suffering and affliction there spread out before him, he neglected to bear in his human mind the admonitory warnings of his personalized adjuster, that's God's will indwelling Jesus and now indwelling all normal moral humans here on earth, regarding the impossibility of limiting the time element of the creative prerogatives of a creator's son under certain conditions and in certain circumstances. Jesus Christ, Michael, is our universe, local universe, Creator's Son. He has all these divine powers. And he is fully here in spirit since May 18th, AD 30 on. He came here incarnate, and now he's here in spirit. And he's here with and as God the Father in paradise also. Reading on, Jesus desired to see these suffering mortals made whole if his Father's will, but not thereby be violated. The personalized gesture of Jesus, that's the will of God, instantly ruled that such an act of creative energy at that time would not transgress the will of the Paradise Father. And by such a decision, due to Jesus' preceding expression of healing desire, the creative act was. Now this is very important. What a Creator's Son desires and his Father wills is. That's a logo universe law. Not in all of Jesus' subsequent earth life did another such en masse physical healing of mortals take place. Section 5, early Sunday morning, paragraphs 6 and 7. When Jesus heard this, he answered, quote, Andrew, have I not taught you and these others that my mission on earth is the revelation of the Father and my message the proclamation of the kingdom of heaven? How is it then that you would have me turn aside from my work for the gratification of the curious and for the satisfactions of those who seek for signs and wonders? Have we not been among these people all these months, and have they flocked in multitudes to hear the good news of the kingdom? Why have they now come to besiege us? It is not because of the healing of their physical bodies. Is it not because of the healing of their physical bodies, rather than as a result of the reception of spiritual truth for the salvation of their souls? When men are attracted to us because of extraordinary manifestations, many of them come seeking not for truth and salvation, but rather in quest of healing for their physical ailments and to secure deliverance from their material difficulties. All this time I have been in Capernaum, and both in the synagogue and by the seaside have I proclaimed the good news of the kingdom to all who had ears to hear and hearts to receive the truth. It is not the will of my Father that I should return with you to cater to these curious ones and to become occupied with the ministry of things physical to the exclusion of the spiritual. I have ordained you to preach the gospel and minister to the sick, but I must not become engrossed in healing to the exclusion of my teaching. No, Andrew, I will not return with you. Go and tell the people to believe in that which we have taught them and to rejoice in the liberty of the sons of God. And make ready for our departure for the other cities of Galilee, where the way has already been prepared for the preaching of the good tidings of the kingdom. It was for this purpose that I came forth from the Father. Go then and prepare for our immediate departure, while I here await your return. Paper 146, First Preaching Tour of Galilee, Introduction, Paragraph 2. This was the first time Jesus permitted his associates to preach without restraint. On this tour, he cautioned them only on three occasions. He admonished them to remain away from Nazareth and to be discreet when passing through Capernaum and Tiberias. It was a source of great satisfaction to the apostles at last to feel they were at liberty to preach and teach without restriction. And they threw themselves into the work of preaching the gospel, ministering to the sick, and baptizing believers with great earnestness and joy. I add, Jesus freely allowed his apostles and other believers, and us now, to teach and preach with their own and our own personal interpretations. True spiritual and intellectual liberty given by Jesus and God the Father as one here with us in spirit. Section 3, the stop at Rama, paragraph 1. At Rama, Jesus had a memorable discussion with the aged Greek philosopher who taught that science and philosophy were sufficient to satisfy the needs of human experience. A lot of people today believe that. Jesus listened with patience and sympathy to this great teacher, allowing the truth of many things he said, but pointing out that, when he was through, he had failed in his discussion of human existence to explain whence, why, and whither, and added, where you leave off, we begin. Religion is a revelation to man's soul, dealing with spiritual realities which the mind alone could never discover or fully fathom. Intellectual strivings may reveal the facts of life, but the gospel of the kingdom unfolds the truths of being. You have discussed the material shadows of truth. Will you now listen while I tell you about the eternal and spiritual realities which cast these transient time shadows of the material facts of mortal existence? For more than an hour, Jesus taught this Greek the saving truths of the gospel of the kingdom. The old philosopher was susceptible to the master's mode of approach, and being sincerely honest of heart, he quickly believed the gospel of salvation. Paragraphs 3, 4, and 5. On the second evening at Ramah, Thomas asked Jesus this question, "Master, how can a new believer in your teaching really know, really be certain, about the truth of this gospel of the kingdom?" And Jesus said to Thomas, "Your assurance that you have entered into the kingdom family of the Father and that you will eternally survive with the children of the kingdom is wholly a matter of personal experience, faith in the word of truth. Spiritual assurance is the equivalent of your personal religious experience in the eternal realities of divine truth and is otherwise equal to your intelligent understanding of truth realities plus your spiritual faith and minus your honest doubts. The Son is naturally endowed with the life of the Father. Having been endowed with the living Spirit of the Father, you are therefore sons of God. You survive your life in the material world of the flesh because you are identified with the Father's living Spirit, the gift of eternal life. Many indeed had this life before I came forth from the Father, and many more have received this Spirit because they believed my word. But I declare that, when I return to the Father, He will send His Spirit into the hearts of all men." And I add on that, yes, May 18th, 8030 on, Jesus and God the Universal Father returned here as the Father-Son union, Spirit of Truth. This allows the will of God, a thought adjuster, to indwell the minds of all normal human beings. What a tremendous spiritual gift of eventual spirit perfection and eternal life in the paradise family of God. Paragraph 6, Jesus goes on, "While you cannot observe the divine spirit at work in your minds, there is a practical method of discovering the degree to which you have yielded the control of your soul powers to the teaching and guidance of this indwelling spirit of the Heavenly Father, and that is the degree of your love for your fellow men. This spirit of the Father partakes of the love of the Father, and as it dominates man, it unfailingly leads in the directions of divine worship and loving regard for one's fellows. At first you believe that you are the sons of God because my teaching has made you more conscious of the inner leadings of our Father's indwelling presence. But presently the Spirit of Truth shall be poured out upon all flesh, and it will live among men and teach all men, even as I now live among you and teach to you the words of truth. And this Spirit of Truth, speaking for the spiritual endowments of your souls, will help you to know that you and all humans are the sons of God. It will unfailingly bear witness with the Father's indwelling presence, your spirit, then dwelling in all men, as it now dwells in some, telling you that you are in reality the sons of God. I add, free will sons of God. All humans, men and women equally, are spiritually classified as sons of God. The many types of angels are the daughters of God. So when it says mankind, men, sons of God, first son, female, woman, all those terms, male terms are correct because females and males are always classified as sons of God. So that's good news for equally for men and women. Now we go on to paragraphs 7 and 8. Jesus says, "Every earth child who follows the leading of the Spirit shall eventually know the will of God, and he who surrenders to the will of my Father shall abide forever. The way from the earth life to the eternal state has not been made plain to you, but there is a way, there always has been, and I have come to make that way new and living. He who enters the kingdom has eternal life already. He shall never perish. But much of this you will the better understand when I have returned to the Father and you are able to view your present experiences retrospect." And all who heard these blessed words were greatly cheered. The Jewish teachings had been confused and uncertain regarding the survival of the righteous, and it was refreshing and inspiring for Jesus' followers to hear these very definite and positive words of assurance about the eternal survival of all true believers. Section 7 at Endor, paragraph 1. At Endor, Jesus escaped for a few days from the clamoring multitudes in quest of physical healing. During their sojourn at this place, the Master recounted for the instruction of the apostles the story of King Saul and the witch of Endor. Jesus plainly told his apostles that the stray and rebellious midwayers, they are midway between the higher seraphim, guardian angels, and us lower humans, who had oftentimes impersonated the supposed spirits of the dead, would soon, that's May 18th, AD 30 on, would soon be brought under control so that they could no more do these strange things. He told his followers that, after he returned to the Father, and after they, as both as one, had poured out their spirit, the spirit of truth, upon all flesh, no more could such semi-spirit beings, so-called unclean spirits, possess the feeble and evil-minded among mortals. We give thanks to Jesus that all spirits here on Urantia Earth are good. There are no more evil spirits. But we humans here, with God-given free will, can always choose to be godly or to be evil sinners. Choose God's light within and accept His eternal life. What a gift. We should always try to become more and more godlike and more to know and do the life and teachings and guidance of Jesus Christ. Now, the Bible is good. It has some of the teachings of Jesus, but not much. There's only about 1,024 words of Jesus, unique words in the four Gospels. And yet the whole Bible is 800,000 words. So only a tiny bit of the Bible has the words of Jesus. Most of the New Testament is from Paul and his views, which are not as good as Jesus' views. And so when you read this Urantia book, Revelation, which is large, it's 2,097 pages, part 4 has about 725 pages on the life and teachings of Jesus. And then the first three parts of the Urantia book have, another roughly 300 pages on the nature and doings of Jesus in those parts. So altogether, there's over 1,000 pages on the nature, life, and teachings of Jesus Christ. And that is what is most needed. All humans really need to know His full teachings, His full true gospel. It will transform this world. Okay, now we go to paper 147, the interlude visit to Jerusalem, section 7, back in Capernaum, paragraph 2. On Tuesday evening, Jesus was conducting one of His customary classes of questions and answers when the leader of the 6 spies said to Him, "I was today talking with one of John's disciples who is here attending upon your teaching." That's John the Baptist's disciples. "And we were at a loss to understand why you never command your disciples," the disciples of Jesus, "to fast and pray as we Pharisees fast and as John bade his followers." And Jesus, referring to a statement by John, answered this questioner, "Do the sons of the bride chamber fast while the bridegroom is with them? As long as the bridegroom remains with them, they can hardly fast. But the time is coming when the bridegroom shall be taken away, and during those times the children of the bride chamber undoubtedly will fast and pray. To pray is natural for the children of light, but fasting is not a part of the gospel of the kingdom of heaven. Be reminded that a wise tailor does not sew a piece of new and unshrunk cloth upon an old garment, lest when it is wet it shrink and produce a worse rent. Neither do men put new wine into old wine skins, lest the new wine burst the skins, so that both the wine and the skins perish. The wise man puts the new wine into fresh wine skins. Therefore do my disciples show wisdom, and that they do not bring too much of the old order over into the new teaching of the gospel of the kingdom. You who have lost your teacher may be justified in fasting for a time. Fasting may be an appropriate part of the law of Moses, but in the coming kingdom, the sons of God shall experience freedom from fear and joy in the divine spirit. And when they heard these words, the disciples of John the Baptist were comforted, while the Pharisees themselves were the more confounded. Section 8, the Feast of Spiritual Goodness. This is 5 paragraphs. That night, long after the usual listeners had retired, Jesus continued to teach his apostles. He began this special instruction by quoting from the prophet Isaiah. Of all the Old Testament prophets, Jesus quoted Isaiah the most. He was the highest of the Old Testament prophets. Now, here's some of the quotes that Jesus selected. Jesus was very wise and adept in selecting and combining different Old Testament paragraphs and verses. These quotes of Isaiah. Why have you fasted? For what reason do you afflict your souls while you continue to find pleasure in oppression and to take delight in injustice? Behold, you fast for the sake of strife and contention and to smite with a fist of wickedness. But you shall not fast in this way to make your voices heard on high. Is it such a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head like a bulrush, to grovel in sackcloth and ashes? Will you dare to call this a fast and an acceptable day in the sight of the Lord? Is not this the fast I should choose? To lose the bonds of wickedness? To undo the knots of heavy burdens? To let the oppressed go free? And to break every yoke? Is it not to share my bread with the hungry? And to bring those who are homeless and poor to my house? When I see those who are naked, I will clothe them. Then shall your light break forth as the morning, while your health springs forth speedily. Your righteousness shall go before you, while the glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then will you call upon the Lord, and he shall answer. You will cry out, and he shall say, Here am I. And all this he will do if you refrain from oppression, condemnation, and vanity. The Father rather desires that you draw out your heart to the hungry, and that you minister to the afflicted souls. Then shall your light shine in obscurity, and even your darkness shall be as a noonday. Then shall the Lord guide you continually, satisfying your soul and renewing your strength. You shall become like a watered garden, like a spring whose waters fail not. And they who do these things shall restore the wasted glories. There shall rise up the foundations of many generations. They shall be called the rebuilders of broken walls, the restorers of safe paths in which to dwell. And then, long into the night, Jesus propounded to his apostles the truth that it was their faith that made them secure in the kingdom of the present and the future, and not their affliction of soul nor fasting of body. Here it is. He exhorted the apostles at least to live up to the idea of the prophet of old, that's Isaiah, and express the hope that they would progress far beyond even the ideals of Isaiah and the older prophets. His last words that night were, Grow in grace by means of that living faith, which grasps the fact that you are the sons of God, while at the same time it recognizes every man as a brother. Paper 148, Training Evangelists in Bethsaida, Section 1, A New School of the Prophets, Paragraph 2. Each of the apostolic teachers taught his own view of the gospel of the kingdom. They made no effort to teach just alike. There was no standardized or dogmatic formulation of theologic doctrines. Though they all taught the same truth, each apostle presented his own personal interpretation of the master's teaching. And Jesus upheld this presentation of the diversity of personal experience in the things of the kingdom, unfailingly harmonizing and coordinating these many and divergent views of the gospel at his weekly question hours. Notwithstanding this great degree of personal liberty in matters of teaching, Simon Peter tended to dominate the theology of the school of evangelists. Next to Peter, James Zebedee exerted the greatest personal influence. Section 3, The Father's Business, Paragraph 3. During these periods of absence, Jesus was accompanied by only two of the apostles. He had released Peter, James, and John temporarily from their assignment as his personal companions, that they might also participate in the work of training the new evangelistic candidates, numbering more than 100. When the Master desired to go to the hills about the Father's business, he would summon to accompany him any two of the apostles who might be at liberty. In this way, each of the 12 enjoyed an opportunity for close association and intimate contact with Jesus. Section 5, the purpose of affliction. And this is good, so we're going to cover all five paragraphs. At another of these private interviews in the garden, Nathanael asked Jesus, "Master, though I am beginning to understand why you refuse to practice healing indiscriminately, I am still at a loss to understand why the loving Father in heaven permits so many of his children on earth to suffer so many afflictions." The Master answered Nathanael, saying, "Nathanael, you and many others are thus perplexed because you do not comprehend how the natural order of this world has been so many times upset by the sinful adventures of certain rebellious traitors to the Father's will." And that's superhuman traitors. "And I have come to make a beginning of setting these things in order. But many ages will be required to restore this part of the universe to former past and thus release the children of men from the extra burdens of sin and rebellion. The presence of evil alone is sufficient test for the ascension of man. Sin is not essential to survival. But my son," we are all sons of Jesus, of course, "but my son, you should know that the Father does not purposely afflict his children. Man brings down upon himself unnecessarily affliction as a result of his persistent refusal to walk in the better ways of the divine will. Affliction is potential and evil, but much of it has been produced by sin and iniquity. Many unusual events have transpired on this world, and it is not strange that all thinking men should be perplexed by the scenes of suffering and affliction which they witness. But of one thing you may be sure. The Father does not send affliction as an arbitrary punishment for wrongdoing. The imperfections and handicaps of evil are inherent. The penalties of sin are inevitable. The destroying consequences of iniquity are inexorable. Man should not blame God for these afflictions, which are the natural result of the life which he chooses to live. Neither should man complain of those experiences which are part of life as it is lived on this world. It is the Father's will that mortal man should work persistently and consistently toward the betterment of his estate on earth. Intelligent application would enable man to overcome much of his earthly misery." And that's very true. With modern science and technology, many of the problems of living are going away. Now we have heating, central heating in the house, air conditioning, things like that were not available back to primitives that had to live in a cave and be subject to nature and constant struggle for fighting with dangerous animals for food. So we've progressed quite a bit, but we have much more to do. And if humans were more intelligent, they would eliminate so much extra problems that sinful humans put on themselves. Humans that want to have unregulated sexual activity, they get all kinds of venereal diseases, which many are now deadly. It's their fault. Paragraph 4. "Nathanael, it is our mission to help men solve their spiritual problems, and in this way to quicken their minds so that they may be the better prepared and inspired to go about solving their manifold material problems. I know of your confusion as you have read the scriptures. All too often, there has prevailed a tendency to ascribe to God the responsibility for everything which ignorant man fails to understand. The Father is not personally responsible for all you may fail to comprehend. Do not doubt the love of the Father just because some just and wise law of his ordaining chances to afflict you because you have innocently or deliberately transgressed such a divine order. There is a law of gravity. If you jump off a high cliff or a high building without a parachute or some other means of support, you're going to crash to the ground and be killed. That's the law of gravity. And so, as we learn more about the laws of nature, then we can protect ourselves. Or if you have to jump off a cliff or something, you can maybe have a parachute or some other device to help you, a glider or a helicopter, so on. Paragraph 5, Jesus states, "But Nathanael, there is much in the scriptures which would have instructed you if you had only read with discernment. Do you not remember that it is written, 'My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, even as the Father corrects the Son in whom he takes delight. The Lord does not afflict willingly. Before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now I do keep the law. Affliction was good for me, that I might thereby learn the divine statutes. I know your sorrows. The eternal God is your refuge, while underneath are the everlasting arms. The Lord is also a refuge for the oppressed, a haven of rest in times of trouble. The Lord will strengthen him upon the bed of affliction. The Lord will not forget the sick. As a father shows compassion for his children, so is the Lord compassionate to those who fear him, or better, to those who obey him, and seek him and obey him and follow him. He knows your body. He remembers that you are dust. He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. He is the hope of the poor, the strength of the needy in his distress, a refuge from the storm, and a shadow from the devastating heat. He gives power to the faint, and to them who have no might, he increases strength. A bruised reed shall he not break, and the smoking flax he will not quench. When you pass through the waters of affliction, I will be with you, and when the rivers of adversity overflow you, I will not forsake you. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and to comfort all who mourn. There is correction in suffering. Affliction does not spring forth from the dust. I add, our God-man Jesus Christ selected, recombined, and amplified the very best of the Old Testament. And note, he did not teach any of the errors therein. Some Bible scholars have determined that mainly in the Old Testament there are over 3,000 errors. Much of the history is totally wrong. And, of course, the Bible is not a science book, and it's not a history book, and it's not a philosophy book. It's for spiritual guidance. And the only true guide in the whole Bible are the words of Jesus, and especially his parables. His parables teach great spiritual truths. You need to concentrate on that. For example, in Luke chapter 15, Jesus' three favorite parables he said all together, the lost sheep, the lost coin, and they lost their prodigal son. That's all in Luke chapter 15. That's even in greater detail in the Arantia book, plus all his other parables. Okay, that's enough for this part. And then in about 2 weeks, we'll go and do the next part. Rather than say goodbye, I like to say farewell, do well. Thank you.